Shmuel Aleph, Perek Yud Gimel. Last week we had Shmuel's final address to the nation, and he finally told them exactly why they were wrong in asking for a king. And from here on in, Shmuel has center stage. We'll have a few times Shmuel comes, as in this Perek, and he corrects Shmuel, and Shmuel will tell him where he's made a mistake. But Shmuel is now the leader. Ben Shana Shol B'molcho. 1 year Shol was in his ruling, in his Molcho, in his kingship. Ushtei Shana Molcho Al Yisrael. And for 2 years he ruled over Klal Yisrael. This pasuk, it's a short pasuk, but there's such a wealth of discussion in the Mefarshim. Exactly what this pasuk is saying and what the message is. The problem is, the events that we're going to learn about, when exactly did they happen? You told me Shol was in the first year of ruling, Ben Shana Shol B'Malcho, he was within the first year, he was like a 1 year old. And then 2 years he ruled over Klal Yisrael, and then the following events happened. Did the events happen in his first year, or do they happen after 2 years? Some of Forshim learned Ben Shana Shol B'Molcho, he ruled for 1 year, meaning from the time that Shmuel anointed him, and he was the king, a whole year transpired with Shol, that went to fight against the king of Ammon, and then the people initially had rejected him, and then they again reaccepted him. That whole process took a year. Ben Shana Shol B'Molcho, he ruled for a year. Then there was a 2 year period of calm over that he was ruling, and then the following events happened. The Ralbag learns that way because the Ralbag is bothered. How could you say that he only ruled, which we'll see later on, Chazal make that derasha, which the Ralbag says is not Pashat Pshat, but Chazal learned that 2 years Shol ruled. So the whole kingship was a two-year term, and that was it. It was just 2 years. And the Ralbag asks that we're going to learn later on that Shol defeated many of the nations all around him. It lists in Perek Yud Dalid, Pasuk Mem Zayin. It says he fought against Moab and Bnei Ammon and Edom and Malchei Tzova and the Plishtim, and wherever he turned, he was victorious. So he was fighting military campaigns all over. And we know from the sequence of events in Shmuel, there was a lot of time that was involved with David HaMelech, chasing after him, and a lot that happened with David. David was hiding away in the field of the Plishtim, in the Sadei Plishtim, for 1 year and 4 months. Besides that, he was hiding out in the desert in Midbar Yehud and in different places. So if you try to figure out that David HaMelech was gone probably for almost 2 years, like, how could it be that Shol was only a king for 2 years and somehow he was able to wage all these military campaigns and he chased after David and we had all these events? So the Ralbag wants to learn Pashup Shat. Alright, so he understands Chazal. Sometimes Chazal make a drush to teach us a certain lesson. But the Pesukim can also be understood in the simple sense that Ben Shana Shol B'Molcho, there was 1 year till he actually was accepted as everybody. It took a year in his ruling till he was acknowledged as the leader. Ushtei Shana Molech Al Yisrael, then there was 2 years that he was the ruler. And then these events happened that we're going to learn about. But it could be his Malchus went much longer. What I find interesting with this pasuk is an example of how through the generations, it's like different kufas and klal Yisrael focused on different lessons and a different stress in the pesukim. When somebody learns Chumash Rashi, so you're familiar with how many times is what you call a diktuk Rashi. Rashi will explain the exact form of the word and whether it's a two-letter shoresh or three letters, the root of it is two letters or three letters, and a whole complicated Rashi exactly what the source of the word means. And a lot of people just gloss over it, it's a diktik Rashi. But, and even the Rashis that don't look like a diktik Rashi, sometimes you wonder, why did Rashi say that? And if somebody knew his diktuk well, he would realize that something in the pasuk just didn't fit grammatically, and Rashi therefore had to explain what he explained. So if a person that like has his eye on diktuk, you'll see like Rashi on Chumash is full of diktuk. And yet nowadays when we learn Rashi, it seems that nowadays when we learn Chumash, Klal Yisrael is not so much into diktuk, and we learn it with exactly the halachas and the dinim and the hashkofas and the lessons and how to perfect ourselves, and the diktuk is not so much stressed. But I get the feeling on this pasuk, because the Abarbanel has pages and pages and pages. What's bothering the Abarbanel? Because he has a very simple cheshbon that you have to, I mean, it's not so simple, but the idea behind it is the way the Rishonim looked at the Pesukim. If I were to ask you, how many years did Shaul reign? So you'd say, I have no idea. You don't even know where to begin. The Abarbanel says, what you got to do is like this. You take out a pen and paper, and you sit down and you look through Sefer Shoftim. And it'll tell you, this Shofet ruled for 40 years. And this king came and caused Klal Yisrael suffering for a certain number of years, and then it was quiet. Add up all of the leaders and all of the years that they were leading. Once you get that, then also there's two psukim that are critical when you want to calculate the years. One is the king of Ammon came to Yiftach. He was one of the latter shoftim, one of the latter judges. And he came to Yiftach and he said he was ready to attack, because he said the Jews took our land. Yiftach sent a message and he said, how come you're coming to attack? So he said, oh, the Jews moved in Eretz Yisrael, they took our land. So Yiftach explained how they didn't really take it from Ammon. Ammon lost the war before that to Sichon. Klal Yisrael captured it from Sichon. So they're really coming with an old account. And he said, it's actually for 300 years we've been here and nobody said a thing. All of a sudden, 300 years later, you wake up and you bring an army, you're ready to attack, and your justification is what happened. You know, imagine if now somebody would say, the Indians go to war, you know, he took the land 300 years ago. So, you know, so we're coming to war. But, you don't know, see, he comes with an army now to attack. So if you keep that in mind, you're going to have to come up with 300 years from when Klal Yisrael came to Eretz Yisrael till the event of Yiftach. And there's one other pasuk. That is when Shlomo HaMelech was building the Beis HaMikdash in Sefer Melochim, it says 480 years from Yetzias Mitzrayim till the Beis HaMikdash was built. So if you have those two numbers, that's what you have to work with. And as you know, there's 480 years from Yetzias Mitzrayim till they built the Beis HaMikdash. There were 40 years in the desert. That leaves you 440. You know, 300 of those years were up to Yiftach. And you add up all the judges and all the years and all the numbers, and then you can figure out what's going on. That is, if it all adds up. It doesn't exactly add up. And Abarbanel has a, and therefore Abarbanel learns the pasuk, Ben Shana Shol B'molcho, that Shol was ruled for a year, and then this is when these events happen that we're going to learn about. Ushnei Shana Malachi Al Yisrael, he ruled 2 years, and the truth is he ruled even more. But for 2 years he had a secure, tranquil Malchus, until David arose as the opposition, or at least in Shaul HaMelech's mind, he was sure that David was out to take the throne. Until David came on the scene, there was 2 years that Shaul was the king and everything went well. After that, once he had the problems with David, it was almost as if he wasn't the king. In other words, he was the king, but he had Agmas Nefesh. It wasn't a pleasure anymore. But 2 years he ruled and things went well. I say what's interesting is the, and there's pages on working out the calculation, which nowadays people don't usually bother working out the calculation. We're here to learn, you know, how to the lessons we can glean from it, and a lot of the details that the Rishonim emphasized, we don't stress as much. But that's the way they learned the pasuk in the Poshita sense. But Chazal learn, Ben Shona Shol B'molcho, Shol was a king in the first year of his Malchus, and that's when these events happened. Parenthetically, once we're talking about him being king, Yushno Ushtei Shona Molach Al Yisrael, he ruled for 2 years. But we're not going to discuss right now, after the 2 years his Malchus was over. And now's an appropriate place to mention it. We're mentioning about he was in the first year of his reign, So parenthetically, he was king for 2 years. But this all happened in the first year. And in terms of how he accomplished so much, Shaul, we'll see, some, we'll get to it in a moment, but Shaul obviously had tremendous siyata dishmaya. Besides the fact that he was such an energetic leader, he accomplished in a short amount of time what would take us, years and years. He did in 2 years. Chazal learned out Ben Shona Shaul v'molcho. A one-year-old Shaul was when he ruled. They could have just said Vayhi b'Shona Harishoina l'malchu Shaul in the first year. The word is the way it's worded. A one-year-old Shaul was in his reign. Why is it expressed like that? Chazal learned out from there a lesson, and there's a few variations on it. But just like a one-year-old baby has no averus, he's perfectly innocent, blameless, that's the way Shaul was. One Chazal says, the Pshat is, why was he perfectly blameless? Because a person's main din v'cheshbon, a person's held accountable, l'achar me'ev ha'esrim, did he fulfill his role in life? Whatever his role is. In other words, whatever your environment is, whatever your society is, did you produce a positive impact, a kiddush Hashem? Did you fulfill your role? If somebody's oilili gedula, if somebody rises to greatness, like becoming a king, a Chazal mentioned by a chassan, when somebody gets married, he's changed his status that his sins are forgiven. Because we don't look at the way it used to be. He's in such a... If he succeeds in his new mission, so what happened before was like a preparation and helped him, but you see what he... His main achievement in life and his role in life, he was successful in. So when Shaul became the king, Ben Shona, he was like a one-year-old. It was a new start. His sins were forgiven. He's beginning anew. He was like a one-year-old. Another pshat in Chazal, Ben Shona Shaul b'molcho, is that Shaul was perfect. In other words, when he became the king, he was faultless. And we learned before, he was probably in his 60s, maybe even older, because he already had a whole family, and Ishbosheth, who was one of the younger children, was 40 when Shaul was nifter. So he had a lot, it wasn't like a bar mitzvah boy who still hasn't done an aveira. He was perfect. And Chazal discussed that exactly. There's a Chazal that says that if Shaul would have been David, and David would have been Shaul, many, many times of David would have been pushed away. In other words, Shaul really as a person, in a sense, was greater than David. But for whatever reason, we've discussed that the different roles that Shaul had, his malchus didn't last. But in terms of who he was, in terms of a person, Shaul had a certain greatness that was almost unparalleled. Ben Shona Shaul b'molcho, he was like a one-year-old that was blameless, that had no averus. Chazal also learned, there's one pshat I saw in the Me'am Lo'ez, Ben Shona Shaul b'molcho, he was like a perfect, like a one-year-old when he became king. You wonder why the malchus didn't last. Sometimes the leader is too great. Shaul was so perfect, that's why he only ruled for 2 years. Because Klal Yisrael, when you have a leader, the Gemara uses this expression, he needs a kupa shel shrotzim, like a box of shrotzim, disgusting insects and crawling and creeping creatures. He's got to have a box of those lizards and stuff like that in back of him. This way, a leader doesn't feel haughty. As if a leader knows there's something in his yichas, something in his family that is not so perfect, and if people are going to start scrutinizing him, and he acts with gaiva, and he acts in a superior way to the people, if he doesn't act with a sense of humiliation, with a sense of humility to Klal Yisrael, if he doesn't act in that manner, people will immediately be able to say, but he's got this kupa shel shrotzim. He doesn't have such a good yichus. And that humbles him, and therefore he's fit to be a leader. Shaul was so perfect, he wasn't fit that him and his children and the malchus should go on for doirei doireis, because there would be a tendency to feel haughty over Klal Yisrael. David HaMelech, as we know, came from Ruth HaMoaviyah, And we'll see later with David, he had opposition throughout. There were people who say David HaMelech wasn't allowed to marry a Jewish wife. Can you imagine that? So on one hand, he had such opposition, even though it was certainly mutter, and that's the Malchus Beis David, and we'll talk about that later. On the other hand, there was always that tinge that there were certain gedolim that came out of the hill that David was terrible. Therefore, he was fit that he and his children could be the leaders of Klal Yisrael. And David HaMelech, we'll see later on, himself was the example of tremendous anivus, of humility. Which, as I say, is that balance. The leader has to have humility, and yet he has to rule like a king who's not Meichel is covered. And one final shot. The Chavis HaLavavis gives a moshel. There was a country that used to appoint a king. And the king was appointed for 1 year, and after the year was up, the king had to relinquish the throne, and he became a commoner, and that's it, the Malchus was over. So most kings enjoyed the year that they were king while it lasted. And then after the year, they had nothing. There was one king who was a chacham. And he figured for 1 year, he can do whatever he wants. He stored away a lot of wealth, and he put away treasures. And then he was able to live the rest of his life without a problem. He had his retirement account. Everything was taken care of. When Shaul became a king, Ben Shona Shaul B'molcho, he was like a one-year king. He was like a one-year-old, like somebody who knew he's got 1 year to go. And with a sense of urgency and a mission to accomplish, and that's how, if you wonder how he did everything in 2 years, if a person imagines he's got 1 year to do it, in 2 years he'll accomplish it. But if a person figures he's got a lifetime, very often a person falls short. Ben Shana Shaul B'molcho, again, in the first year of Shaul's reign, these events transpired. Ushtei Shana Molach al Yisrael, and in total, he ruled for 2 years over Klal Yisrael. Vayivchar lo Shaul Shloshes Alofim Yisrael. Shaul chose 3,000 men from Klal Yisrael. As these were chosen, they were chosen either as warriors. It doesn't say clearly they were soldiers. Could be they were an honor guard. We'll see later on, they were soldiers, but there was only 3,000. He chose 3,000 men, Vayiyuim Shaul Alpayim, 2,000 of them were with Shaul, B'michmosh Uvahar Beisel, they were in two places. Some say he put 1,000 in the place Michmosh, and 1,000 in Har Beisel. But like Shaul had two command posts, he had 1,000 men here and 1,000 men there. V'elef hoyuim Yonason, 1,000 were with Yonason, Begivas Binyamin, and Givas Binyamin, which is where Shaul was from, and Yonason was there with 1,000 men. V'yeseram and all the rest of the people, Shilach Ish La'oholov, he sent them home. It must have been a tremendous crowd. They had come to Gilgal, and they had all publicly accepted Shaul as the king, and Shmuel spoke to them. They had a tremendous throng of people. Everyone was sent home except for these few people. 2,000 with Shaul, 1,000 and 1,000 there, and Yonason. This is the first time that we mention Yonason. And we're gonna see later on, he obviously was on a very high madrega. Some even refer to him like, from the Yonason, from the word Yonah Tama, like a perfect dove. Klal Yisrael is compared to the Yonah. This is like a perfect individual. Yonah Tama, Yonah son. But we're going to see a lot of things he did on his own. We'll see. Right now we'll see, and we'll see in a moment. But it seems like could be Shaul didn't plan to go to war. As he sent everybody home, he had a new position. And a lot of times when you take on a new position, just like a couple gets married, shana noki yileveso shana echos. For 1 year, he should put everything else sort of on hold because he's got to solidify his marriage. They got to get used to each other and build a life together. So the first year is devoted to the family, and then afterwards he'll go into his other endeavors. So too, Shaul is now becoming the king. Sent everybody home, he had his few people with him, let him consolidate that he should be the ruler over the people, and things should be established. Vayach Yonason, eis nitziv plishtim asher begeva. Yonason killed the governor, the officer of the plishtim that was in Geva. Geva is Givas Binyamin, where Yonason was. And again, it's not clear. Did he ask Shaul before he did it? Did he ask Shmuel? It seems to be not. It seems like Yonason on his own decided, you know, he was in charge with his 1,000 men in Givas Binyamin, and he killed the Netziv Plishtim. It's not a clear. Maybe the Plishtim officer provoked him. Maybe he was causing problems among the people. But it doesn't say exactly how and why, but it seems like he acted on his own, and we'll see the end of it worked out well. In other words, Yonason did a lot of things on his own, and there was a certain siyata dishmaya, and things worked out. But at the moment, Yonason killed the Netziv HaPlishtim Asher Begeva, Vayishmu Plishtim, and the Plishtim heard. Now, it's not the first time somebody was killed and it sets off a war, right? World War I, you know, if somebody's killed, it can throw the whole area into conflict. V'shol takab ha-shofar v'chol ha-aretz lemar. Shol blew the shofar through the land. He sent messengers all over, setting off the alarm sirens. They blew the shofar saying, Yishmu ha-ivrim, let the Ivrim hear. One of those cases, I guess, a father just has to come through and his son does something, whether you like it or not, you gotta come. So here Yonason went ahead and he killed the Netziv Plishtim, and now it's Shol's headache. So he's got to mobilize the people. He didn't say Yishmu ha-Yehudim, he said Yishmu ha-Ivrim. Let the Hebrews hear. Ivrim is a word for Klal Yisrael in a derogatory, in a low manner, when they're degraded. Perhaps he's stressing to them, within, under the rule of the Plishtim, I say the Plishtim still had their governors through the land, and they had a tight control on the country. Yishmu ha-Ivrim, let the Ivrim, the Hebrews, hear. Now's our chance to finally throw off the yoke of the Plishtim. You got to prepare. V'chol Yisrael shamu leimor, all of Klal Yisrael heard, saying, Hikoshol es Netziv Plishtim. Shol killed the rule of the Plishtim. Again, he didn't do it, it was his son. But all the, whatever Yonason did was blamed on him. Perhaps, maybe they thought it was Shol's idea. Again, we don't know if Yonason acted under the direction of Shol. But Shol's the one responsible, obviously. Shol struck the Netziv Plishtim. V'gam nivash Yisrael ba plishtim, and Klal Yisrael was nivash. Nivash is a term you find like something that rots or spoils. Like it says by the mon, the sun shone, and it says vayorum toloim, the mon got all wormy, vayivash, and it spoiled. Nivash, they became like despised, they became abhorred, the plishtim were just sick of the Klal Yisrael. Now, till now they ruled over Klal Yisrael, but now they looked at every Jew like you know, as they despised every Jew. Like, what kind of a business that he went ahead and he killed our governor? Of course, Klal Yisrael was held responsible because what Yonason did is what Shol did, and it's the Jewish army. And whether it was his own decision or not, this was like the Yidden attacked. Nivash Yisrael ba plishtim vaitzaku am achrei Shol hagilgal. So the people like cried out, there was a mass mobilization, and everybody came to Shol in Gilgal. Gilgal is where Shmuel had gathered all the people in order to make Shol to reinstitute the Malchus, that everyone should accept Shol as king, and they were still there. Everybody came to join Shol in Gilgal. Uflishtim Nesfu, now we're going to put that on hold, exactly what happened on the Jewish side. Now what was happening with the Plishtim? Uplishtim Nesfu li lochim im Yisrael. The Plishtim gathered to fight with Klal Yisrael. Shloshim elef rechev. There were 30,000 chariots. V'sheshes alofim paroshim. And there were 6,000 cavalry. People riding the horses. V'om kachol al sher al svas hayom. And the people was like the sand by the seashore. Leroy, there was so many. You can't count the granules of sand on a beach. And you couldn't count the plishtim. There was just like a swarm of them. There was as far as the eye could see. Vayalu vayachnu b'michmosh. They went up and they camped by Michmosh. Kidmas Beis Oven, which was on the east of Beis Oven. Now, we learned before about Michmosh. in Pasuk Beis. That was one of Shaul's headquarters. He had 2,000 men, 1,000 he put in Michmash, and the other 1,000 elsewhere. But instead of Michmash being the mighty place of Klal Yisrael, the Plishtim, that was there, that was where the Plishtim camped. It was almost like a joke. In other words, the Jewish forces were put there, but I guess they scattered or they disappeared. In other words, now this is where the Plishtim were camping, right? In Michmash is where the Plishtim were camped. The Ish Yisrael ro ki tzar lo. The Jewish man saw, Klal Yisrael saw, ki tzar lo, that he was in a very difficult situation. Ki nigas ha'am, because the people were being pressed, were being oppressed. In other words, they knew who they were dealing with. They were dealing with the Plishtim, who, as I say, we're going to see in a moment, the Plishtim had an iron, no pun intended, I was going to say they had an iron hand on the country. Actually, we're going to learn that they didn't allow the Yidden to have any iron weapons. And I was thinking, can you imagine, nobody had an iron frying pan. Nobody had any metal in the whole country. They had a solid handle on Klal Yisrael. That's who they were up against. They saw Kitzarlo, that they were in a very difficult situation. That's one problem. Kinigasom, because the people felt this oppression, this pressure from the Plishtim. A second problem is their reaction. They looked around and they said, you know, if everyone else would be willing to fight, I'll stay and I'll fight. But look what's happening. Vayischabu ha'am, the people's hiding, ba'ma'oros, they were hiding in caves. Uvachavochim, which the Mitzudas teaches, they were hiding among the thorns. People were hiding like you know, the resistance, the partisans, you know, they're going and hiding in the forest, they're hiding among the thorns. Uvaslaim, and among the rocks, people going behind boulders, they just wanted to be out of sight. The Plishtim shouldn't know their hideout. Uvatsrichim, in towers, where at least they'll be high up. If the Plishtim decide to attack, they'll be high up. Uvaboyrois, and people are hiding deep in the ground. I guess Hussein wasn't the first guy to do that. They'll hide down, and nobody will find them. So the guy looked around, and he said, you know, the Plishtim are here, but it's not like anyone else is ready to fight. Everyone's scattering. Not only that, the Ivrim Ovrus Hayarden, all the flights out of the country were booked. The Yidden were running across the Yarden, Eretz God v'Gilad, to the land of God and Gilad. As they jumped to the east bank, and as they left Eretz Yisrael, and they left the country. Now, right across from Eretz Yisrael, from Yehuda, from Binyamin, is the area of Reuven. The Shevet Reuven had that area. But they didn't even go there. They went across the yard and they went all the way up north, and they were like really far away. They were far away from the battle. By the land of God, and God was known as mighty warriors. God, Yedud, Yegudenu, they used to go out to war and they all came back united. So anyways, they went where the people were strong and were secure, far away from the Plishtim, and they were out of the picture. The Gilad. V'sholo denu ba'Gilgal. And there's a fourth problem, besides the fact that they felt the pressure of the Plishtim, and the people on their side, that is the Malbim lists these as four separate problems, and the Yidden that were on their side were hiding. And the third problem is a lot of the Yidden had left the country. And a fourth problem is V'sholo denu ba'Gilgal. You know, the last time around when Amon came against Klal Yisrael, Shaul was invigorated and he got together the people and he went to war and he won. Now Shaul's still staying in Gilgal. They made him the king. And there's like a national emergency. And he's still in Gilgal. V'sholo denu ba'Gilgal. V'cho am chardu acharov. But the people there, still there was a certain sense of urgency, like a trembling, like a lot of movement. They were all coming after Shaul. Some say they were trembling after him, meaning that they were telling him, no, we got to do something. They felt a lot of, they put the blame on Shaul. In other words, look what Yonason did. You put Yonason in charge of the 1,000 men. Maybe it was Shaul's idea. But Yonason killed the Netziv Plishtim. No, let's act. Vayochel Shivas Yomim. Shaul waited 7 days. Lamoed Asher Shmuel. To to the time that had been set up with Shmuel. V'lobo Shmuel ha-Gilgal, Shmuel did not come to the Gilgal, v'yofetz ha'omei olav, and the people started scattering, and they were leaving. Shmuel had told Shaul earlier that the time would come. It's in Perek Yud, Pasuk Ches. Just to repeat that Pasuk from Perek Yud. After Shmuel had given Shaul all of the signs that when these things come true, you'll know that indeed you are going to be the king, which we mentioned it was initially done secretly. It was between Shmuel and Shaul, and nobody knew about it. So Shmuel told him, no, you really are the king. And he gave him a whole bunch of signs. You'll go here, and you'll meet this person, and you'll meet these people. And he gave him a whole bunch of signs to show that Shaul that indeed he's going to be king. At that point, he said, just this one pasuk in Shmuel, Perek Yud, pasuk Ches. He said, V'yaradata lefanei ha-Gilgal. You'll go down before me to Gilgal. V'inei anochi yorede lecha. I'm going to come down to you. Lahalos olos lizboach zivchei shlomim. And I'll bring up a korban oila on the mizbeach. And I'll bring shlomim sacrifices. Shivas yomim tochel, you should wait 7 days, ad bo'iye lecha, till I come to you. V'hodati lecha, and I will tell you eis asher tase, what you should do. That's the whole pasuk. Now, this was not the one message that Shmuel gave Shaul. He gave him a whole bunch of different signs that's going to happen. This was a very, you don't find Chazal stress it because it was taken for granted that Shaul was able to absorb everything, that at the same moment he has the excitement and he's told he's going to be king and all these signs and everything on his mind, and it wasn't told to him that this is like the word, it's not my decision, it's a nevuah from Hashem that you have to wait. It was just like Shmuel talking, wait 7 days, I'll come and I'll bring the korbanos and I'll let you know what to do. He didn't say this was going to be a moment of war. He didn't say exactly, does that mean that Shaul can't do any korbanos before Shmuel comes? There's a lot of details that were left out, which now in hindsight we can look at it and we say, oh, this is obviously what Shmuel meant. But Shaul, who is right now in this situation, had the nisoyin, and this was told to him not a month ago. It was probably told to him, either it could be this was within that first year, but it could be it was almost a year ago, it could be it was 2 years ago, depending on the different pshatim. It was told to him a long time ago as one pasuk that came out of Shmuel's mouth, and he didn't stress that it's the words of the Navi, and he didn't tell that's what he said. So vayochel shivas yomim. So again, Shaul waited 7 days. Lamoid asher Shmuel, which was the time that Shmuel had designated. Shmuel did not come. So what should he do? He waited the seventh day. The seventh day in the morning, normally we have in halacha for many different inyonim, we say, Mixas Ayom Kikulo. Once the day begins, Mixas Ayom, it's like the day is like a whole day. Or you need 7 days, but it was already the seventh day. And the people were leaving. And as the Malbim points out again, it's telling you the four reasons Shaul did what he did. The first reason is there was a tremendous sakana, like we mentioned in the previous psukim. The plishtim were there, and people were in hiding. They felt in danger from the plishtim. This is a case of sakanas nefoshes. The second point, he waited 7 days. In other words, even though there was a tremendous sakana for Klal Yisrael, he waited his 7 days. The third point, Vayofetz ha'omei olav, the people were scattering. Meaning, there was a sakana, and he was holding on, but he might reach the point of no return. It's getting worse and worse. The army is deserting. The people is leaving. And the fourth point, Vayomer Shaul. Shaul said, Hagishu elai ha'olav hashlamim. Bring close to me the oila and the shlomim, vayal ha'oila, and he brought up the korban oila. Meaning Shmuel never said to him, don't bring a korban. Shmuel said, I will come down to you and I will bring korbanos and I'll tell you what to do. Right? That's all he told him. So Shaul, all he did was, in this case of tremendous emergency, he brought a korban. That's all he did. Now, what happens if Shmuel comes the next moment? He'll get another animal, and Shmuel can bring a korban. And as he didn't think it was such a, under the case of necessity, and we'll see in a moment why he did this. And it was when he finished bringing up that korban oila, v'nei Shmuel bo, Shmuel came. It's not the first time in Klal Yisrael that Klal Yisrael waited and waited and waited, like we had by the eagle. They waited, and then they finally figured, okay, they acted, and then a moment later, they saw, had they held on a little bit longer, it would have worked out. He brought up the oila. He didn't bring the shlomim, just that first korban. V'nei Shmuel bo, and Shmuel came. V'yetzei Shaul likros, so Shaul went out to greet him, levorcho, and to bless him. And as I say, these 7 days went by. Could be Shaul didn't react, didn't send any messengers to Shmuel, because he figured Shmuel's a Navi, Shmuel knows what's happening, and Shmuel will come. I said, you got to hold on 7 days. On the other hand, Shmuel didn't send a messenger to Shaul. Obviously, Shmuel knew that he wasn't supposed to. This was a test for Shaul, and he's not supposed to send a message. But you can imagine if Shmuel told him, a year or two ago, there's going to be a point you'll be at Gilgal, wait for me. You know, who said this was the point? Obviously, it was understood this was the point, but the fact that Shmuel didn't even send a message, I'm coming, I'm, you know, in other words, what's happening? All of a sudden, Shmuel comes. Vayomer Shmuel me'osisa. So Shmuel said to him, what did you do? I don't know if it was a question like you find Chazal say, Hashem said to Adam Arishan, Ayeka, where are you? In other words, he gave him an opening to explain himself, to say what happened. Or maybe it was a rhetorical question, like, what are you doing? You know, in other words, but whatever the case was, he said to Shaul, Melasisa, what do you do? Vayomer Shaul. And now Shaul explains exactly what he did and what the rationale was. Ki ra'isi ki nofat ha'omei olai. First of all, I saw that the people were scattering. They were leaving. My second point of defense is you didn't come. We had a set, we had a date, and you didn't come. Like you find Chazal say, Hashem said to Adam Arishan, Ayeka, where are you? And he gave him an opening to explain himself, to say what happened. Or maybe it was a rhetorical question, like, what are you doing? You know, in other words, but whatever the case was, he said to Shaul, Melasisa, what do you do? Vayomer Shaul. And now Shaul explains exactly what he did and what the rationale was. Ki ra'isi ki nofat ha'omei olai. First of all, I saw that the people were scattering. They were leaving. Ve'atol ovosa l'moed hayomim. My second point of defense is you didn't come. We had a set, we had a date, and you didn't come. Uflishtim ne'asofim michmosh. And the plishtim were gathered in michmosh, which was nearby, and they're ready to attack with their tremendous, tremendous army. Va'omar, and I said, Ata yerdu plishtim elai. Now the plishtim are going to come down to me, ha'gilgal, to where I am in Gilgal. Ufnei Hashem lo chilisi. And I didn't daven. With a korban, it comes, somebody brings a korban as if he feels that the life of the animal is really his life, should be given over to Hashem. And the korban is the medium by which he develops a certain bond with Hashem. I haven't pleaded with Hashem yet. For esapak, and I strengthened myself. It took a tremendous amount of willpower. I brought up the oila. On one hand, I thought to myself, do nothing. On the other hand, what happens if the plishtim attack and I haven't brought a korban? He was like, Machashim hefsed mitzvah keneged tzchara. As he made the cheshbon, Shaul was a tremendously great person. And if we would have these cases and we'd do whatever we did, you'd probably have a tremendous tzchar. Whatever you do is right. The main thing, can you imagine somebody in such an emergency is thinking, what would Hashem want? So whether you get the right answer, you get the wrong answer. If a guy can think with such a machshava, for us would be tzaddikim. But with somebody like Shaul, we'll see what the taina was. But I had to be into me mechazik myself, that how can you allow the plishtim to attack Klal Yisrael and you're not prepared? Preparing means to daven. I didn't bring a korban. So I brought the korban. In other words, the Malbim breaks it up. In other words, there were two mistakes in a cheshbon. First thing is I waited 7 days. I calculated 7 days and 7 days came. So I thought there's no problem. Second of all, even I guess he didn't want to rely on that and attack the plishtim without Shmuel, even though if he waited 7 days, he should be able to do whatever he wants. In other words, the 7 days are up. But the second mistake was, I thought, you know, I'm not going to attack the plishtim, I'll just bring a korban. Bringing a korban is not going against Shmuel. I'm waiting for you. In the meantime, I'm bringing a korban just to be okay. Also, there were two reasons why it was such a sakana. The fact that the people were leaving, and secondly, even if the people would be there, and even if he had a big army, but the plishtim are in Michmash, right nearby, and the plishtim have such a tremendous army, we have to take emergency measures. Vayomer Shmuel al Shaul. So Shmuel said to Shaul, Niskolta, you are foolish. And you find this throughout the Nevi'im. It's tremendous. First of all, you see the godless of the Yiddish kings. Even those that weren't on the Madrego Shaul. That throughout, the Nevi'im came to them, and they spoke to them in the harshest terms, because it was HaKadosh Baruch Hu's measure. They're living by a different standard. I could be, I've mentioned that muscle before, but I think the muscle's an accurate one. It's like you can have somebody in the minor leagues, and he's the best player. And then all of a sudden he decides, you know, instead of being in the minor leagues and being the best pitcher, he'll go to the major leagues. And he goes to the major leagues, and they call him a failure, and he's no good, and he doesn't know what he's doing. But the very fact that he's in the major leagues, that itself is like a chashivas. He's got a bigger salary, he's got the honor, he's got everything that would never have in the minor leagues, even though when he was in that lower level, he was seen to be much, much greater. But it's not so. The same thing, we're like living life in the minor leagues. And lamaisu, we do whatever mitzvahs, and everything's got its schar v'einish, and everything has its cheshbon. And the tzaddikim, though, that are living on the major leagues, they're like living through midas hadin. Their oilam habo and their madregas are... Even our Olam Haba we can't comprehend. Olam Haba for any individual is tremendous. But as great as a person's Olam Haba is, these tzaddikim are on a totally different level. But if you want to be in their league, you're judged by a different standard. But the very fact that they could be judged that way shows their greatness. But Shmuel says to Shaul Niskolta, you were... You know, imagine I'm saying to him, you idiot! You know, and Niskolta, you're foolish! But it's a very harsh term. It's more than just saying you made a mistake. It really is. Niskolta, lo shamartas mitzvah Hashem Elokecha. You didn't guard the mitzvah, the command of Hashem, your Elokecha. Asher tzivach, what Hashem commanded you. You had a command and you didn't keep it. Ki'ata, because now, heichin Hashem es mamlachtecha, Hashem established your malchus, El Yisrael, to the Jewish people, ad oilam, forever. So first of all, here, now that Shaul made a mistake, Shmuel told him, you should know everything that I said to you is directly the mitzvah Hashem Elokecha, and it has the law that if somebody breaks the word of the Navi, is chayev misa, and as you made a terrible, terrible mistake. Which I say, Shaul initially had many reasons why it should be okay. But it was a mistake. Ki'ata, because now, and there's a number of ways of understanding this. One pshat is ki'ata, right now, heichin Hashem es mamlachtecha. Hashem just now established your malchus. This is like the first rule, this is the first decision that you are making as the accepted king of Klal Yisrael. And right now, when you got your malchus for the first time, you're just establishing it, and you make such a mistake. And we'll see, the next pasuk starts off va'ata, and now the malchus won't last. In other words, he stresses again, now your malchus was established, now you made a mistake. In other words, this was the big nisayim that you had. This was your big opportunity, and you ruined it. It would have been nice if Shaul would have known that in advance, but that's part of the test, that a person goes through life and you don't know when the big moment is. And this was the big moment that Shaul obviously made a mistake. Also, if he wouldn't have made the mistake, he ata, now, had you not made the mistake, Heichin Hashem es mamlachtcha, your malchus would have been established to Klal Yisrael ad oilam, forever. And we discussed earlier this pasuk when we discussed initially about Shaul becoming the king. This pasuk seems to say that if Shaul didn't make a mistake, there wouldn't be malchus based of it. Shaul would be the king ad oilam forever. Him and his descendants ad oilam. But two of the pshatim mentioned in the Rishonim, the Ramban learns that if Shaul didn't make these mistakes, there would have been a Malchus of Shlomo. And it would have been, he would have been the king over Ephraim, Menashe, Binyamin. He came from Binyamin, from Rachel, from the mother Rachel, Rachel Imenu. So Rachel Imenu's children, Ephraim, Menashe, and Binyamin, would have been under King Shaul. And David HaMelech, of course, we know David HaMelech had to be the king, Lo Yosu Shevet Mi Yehuda. David would have been king, but Shaul would have had a separate lineage. Perhaps they would have been kings under David. There would have been like the supreme king, and Shaul would have been a more minor king, but there would have been a Malchus for Shlomo Ad Oilam. The Ralbag learns Ad Oilam could mean just for a very long time. Like we learn in Eved Ivri, somebody sells himself to be a Jewish slave, and then they drill a hole in his ear, and it says, Vavodoy L'Oilam. He serves the master, le'oilam. Le'oilam means up till yovel, for 50 years. In other words, oilam doesn't always mean for eternity. Oilam could mean for a very long time. But here, because of this, it's not going to last. As we learned, Shaul was only king for 2 years. And this was actually not the major, we'll see later on, the Malchus is not really taken away from Shaul yet. He's just told that it's not going to last. But we'll see, there was another mistake that was later on. But now, because of this, we can tell the Malchus is not going to last. Bigesh Hashem lo ish kilvovo. Hashem has sought for himself, ish, a person kilvovo, like Hashem's heart. In other words, we have our own desires. And we try to be batal ritzoincha mipnei ritzoinei, to put our own desires on hold and to try to do the ratzon Hashem, to use b'chol levavcha, to use our whole heart to serve Hashem. But this is like a higher madrega. This is not just serve Hashem with your whole heart. This is, he wanted somebody whose heart is like kaviyochel, the heart of Hashem, that like his desires, he's like totally attuned that what he wants in life is what Hashem wants. He's totally on the same wavelength. It's ish kilavovo, like you would say he's a man like my heart. We mamish feel the same reaction. We feel the same in everything. Obviously, Shaul is thinking differently by the fact that he did what he did. Hashem wants an ish kilavovo, somebody that's like kaviyochel, like the heart of Hashem. Vayitzaveyu Hashem l'nogid al amo. And Hashem commanded this new ruler, we'll see as David, that he should be the leader on his people. Ki lo shamarta es asher tzivcha Hashem, because you didn't guard what Hashem commanded you. Vayokom Shmuel got up, vayalmin ha-Gilgal, and he went up from Gilgal, Givas Binyamin to Givas Binyamin, which is where Yonasan had been with his 1,000 men. Now it doesn't say if Shaul went with him or not. It says Shmuel went up and he went to Gilgal. But Yifkot Shaul asa'am hanimsi mimo, Shaul counted the people who were with him to take stock of what's doing. Kishesh miosish. And he saw there was 600 men, that's all he had. When we said the people were leaving, we meant it. There must have been such a tremendous thousands, hundreds of thousands of people came to make Shaul the king. And it's hard to imagine what it's like to just see everyone just leaving. And they're waiting for Shaul, and he's the king. And instead of acting, he's waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting. Days and days, and the plishtim, the army's right there. And you can imagine the way people thought, you know. And we had our doubts about him to begin with. And now we see, you know, after we decided, okay, Shaul should be the king. The first time it comes that we need him, And we've all accepted him. You see how he's reacting or not reacting. So Shaul counted the people with him. It was like 600 people. And the Mephoshim say that when Vayokam Shmuel, when Shmuel got up, it could be he went with Shaul. The Pasuk doesn't mention Shaul because Shaul went along with him. And Shaul had just got chastised and just got all this tochacha. So Shaul's not mentioned anymore. It was Shmuel was sort of the driving force. But the fact that Shmuel went up and he went to Givas Binyamin, which is where Yonasan was, and it's where the rest of the army was, so it could be the fact that it says Shmuel went is to show that Shmuel was still supporting Shaul, and he gave him at least that little bit of encouragement by going together with Shaul. And we'll see later on, after the incident with Amalek, Shaul actually wanted, he asked Shmuel, you should come with me. That the people should see that Shmuel is still with Shaul, that he hasn't totally deserted Shaul. But here, again, Shmuel went to Givas Binyamin. Shaul counted and there were 600 people. The Shaul, the Yonasan Beno, Shaul and his son Yonasan, the Amanimsa, Imam, and the people that were with them, Yoshvim Geva Binyamin, were now all in Geva Binyamin. Some learn he actually now had 1,600, or maybe he had the 600 before he came to Givas Binyamin, and if Yonasan was there with 1,000 men, so now he's got 1,600. But they're all there. Uflishtim chanu b'michmash. And again, the plishtim are camped in Michmash. And we're going to see it in a moment. The Yidden didn't have weapons. And if the plishtim are right in Michmash, meaning in hand-to-hand combat, the Yidden would definitely lose al piderach hateva. The weapons that the Yidden could have had, let's see, some of Forsha mentioned, is they didn't have any iron weapons. So they could have had slingshots, or catapults that throw stones, or bows and arrows. But that's all good at a distance. When the Novi's saying the plishtim are in Michmash, meaning they're right nearby. So if the plishtim are still, let's say, in Michmash, and you attack before they come any closer, so with bows and arrows, that's fine for a battle at a distance. Once it gets to be hand-to-hand combat, bow and arrow it doesn't work anymore. So the fact that the plishtim are so close, and there's so many plishtim and so few yidden, the yidden we're going to see didn't even have weapons, there's a tremendous, tremendous pressure that we better act now before it's too late. And normally, again for us, you know, if somebody is going through a very important occasion in his life, or he's about to make an important, be playing an important role, it's not the time to point out his shortcomings. Or he needs encouragement, he needs chizuk, or he's about to, you know, imagine, you know, in other words, normally you'd expect somebody before going out to war, you at least give him some encouragement. To imagine that Shaul gets such a terrible message from Shmuel. It's only the greatness of those people that they could take it. Now, Shmuel just went ahead and told him that Nevuah, that's it, you've blown it, you did a foolish thing, and you broke the command of Hashem, which, as we mentioned, it was known that once you've called it the command of Hashem, the command of Hashem given through a Novi is Chayiv Misa. So you take somebody who's the tzaddik, who's a ben shana shol v'molcho, it's like he's like a one-year-old with no averis, and you go ahead and you tell him in the harshest terms, you blew it and you made the worst mistake, and not only that, you affected not just yourself, but there won't be a malchus, you would have had a malchus forever. And then Shmuel goes on his way, and Shaul's left with the whole army, and he's supposed to fight like a courageous leader and lead the war. But let's see what happened with the plishtim. Vayetze ha-mashchis m'machne plishtim. I don't know if these are the shock troops. These are troops that were mashchis, that destroyed everything. And they went, I don't know if they plundered whatever they found, or they destroyed whatever they found, and the plishtim divided into a three-pronged attack. Vayetze ha-mashchis m'machne plishtim. The mashchis came out from the plishtim camp. Shlosha roshim, and three different routes, three different groups. Haroish echad yifnel derech Ofra. The first group turned to the path of Ofra. El eret Shuol, to the land of Shuol. The Targum says, the last word says, La'ara deroma, to the south. As the plishtim were on the coast, like where Gaza is nowadays, they were on the Mediterranean coast. And they came out, they're obviously traveling east toward where the Yidden were. They were on the west, they're traveling east. One group turned to the south, El Eretz Shu'ol. Some say it was in a land where there were a lot of foxes. That's why it's called Eretz Shu'ol. Could be it was a desert area. V'haroi shechad yifne, and one group turned derech Beis Choron, through the area of Beis Choron, which again seems to be a place in the south. I say there are some mafarshim, the Das Seferim. What you do is when you see such a pasuk, you look through Tanakh and you see where else you have Beis Choron and what you can discover about that route and what the lesson is. But there was a group that traveled that way. V'haroi shechad yifne derech ha'gvul. And another group traveled along the boundary. There must have been a boundary between the Plishtim and Klal Yisrael, even though the Plishtim had control over the whole Jewish land. But along that boundary, right, entering Eretz Yisrael proper, they traveled there. Hanishkaf al Gei HaTzvoim, and it overlooked the valley of the Tzvoim, Hamidbara, to the desert. HaTzvoim, the Metzuda says it was some type of Efes, some type of Chaya. Rashi says, Min Sheretz Ra'u Mazik, some type of low, creeping creature that's very dangerous. I don't know exactly what type of... It doesn't say scorpion, I assume it's not a scorpion. But it could be it was some Sheretz Ra'u Mazik. I saw some others learn that it's a... it was some type of dog, maybe a jackal, or, you know, some type of wild dogs. But there was some type of... It was like in the desert. In fact, the Das Seferim discusses it's almost as if the Plishtim are treading very carefully. That in the Jewish side, there's a mass panic. That the Plishtim have such a mighty army. On the other hand, the Plishtim, the last time they went to war, they were defeated. They lost under Shmuel. There was a case where they lost the battle. And then they had the whole incident with the Aron, that they captured the Aron and they suffered. So they're like traveling through the desert. They're traveling in places where you have harmful creatures, where it's really not a place of civilization. Or as they're showing their control, and they're, maybe it's a flanking maneuver, but they're traveling in these unpopulated areas, but they've split up into three groups where they can really blanket the whole area. And as soon as they decide that they will attack, or they it seems like they'll just overrun everything. V'charash lo yimotzei. There were no smiths, no craftsmen, nobody who knew how to work with iron. B'chol Eretz Yisrael, the whole Eretz Yisrael. Ki omru plishtim, the plishtim said, pen yasu ha'ivrim. Again, they spoke to them in a derogatory term. The Hebrews shouldn't make a cherev or chanis, a sword or a spear. And because they were afraid that if there's any iron workers, they would be able to make a spear, therefore there were nobody who could work with iron. There were no factories for working with iron. Vayerdu kol Yisrael ha'plishtim. So what happens is, the Yidden would have to go down to the Plishtim, Liltosh Ishas Macharashto, for everyone to sharpen his plow, his plowing implements, Bes Eso is a spade, a kli used for digging, Bes Kardumo, or his axe, Ve'es Machareshoso. The Metzudas learns that Machareshoso is not the same as Macharashto, even though they're very similar. Machareshoso, the Metzudas says, could mean from the word like Chorosh. Chorosh Eitzim is a craftsman with wood, but he needs metal tools. Beis Machareshoso, the tool that he would use when he's working with his as a Chorosh, that tool also. These were all iron tools. Whenever you needed to sharpen your knife or your tool, you had to go down to the Plishtim. You'd show him your tool, you have here an axe or whatever, and they would sharpen it for you. But they had a total control over everything. So sometimes when it was too difficult to go to the Plishtim, imagine every single time you have to travel out of the country, you have to go all the way over there to get it sharpened. So sometimes they did a very a homemade job. They had a hapitzirapim, some type of sharpening file, to sharpen metal. La machareshosos v'lo esim. V'lishlosh kilshon is like a three-pronged pitchfork. ulahakardumim, and for the axes, ulahatziv hadorvon. Dorvan is like the stick you use to guide the oxen. You bang it a little on the right side or the left side. You want the ox to walk straight. And at the end of the stick, they'd put like a little metal point to like knock, tap him with it to get him to walk the right way. But if you want to put the metal piece into your wooden ox goad, that's what they call it, you would need somebody to sharpen that metal piece that it should be able to fit into the hole properly. For all, even little things like that, or they're all farmers, everything like that, either they had to do it with their own simple file, which wasn't a proper job, or they went down to the plishtim. V'hoyyubiyom milchemes, it was on the day of battle, v'lo nimtzacher v'chanis biyad kol'om, there was not a single sword or a spear by anyone. Asher es shol ves yonason, that was with shol and yonason, v'atzimotzei l'shol, it was found to shol yonason b'no. Two people had a metal weapon. Shol and Yonasan. That's it. Vayetze Matzah Plishtim. And now the group of soldiers from the Plishtim went out, Almavar Michmash, and they crossed over to Michmash. And we're going to see they're getting closer. They're about ready to start the war.